Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. It's the 8th of March, 2026, 7:30 in the morning on an overcast, grimish day. And a pipe video has just been released. Marvellous. With the lovely Julia and myself, and a lovely gift, which I won't reveal, of course. I need to go and wash up in a minute, but before I do that, if you have watched the English couple, which by now I'm sure you have, you loyal viewers and listeners to this, I'm just looking around because we were given a magazine by our friend Ian. Bear with me, I can see it, I've just got to get it, and I wanted to just read something to you from it. Just in my pile of books, it's managed to transgress. Is that the right word? Probably not. Down a bit. I'm coming back. I'm on the other side of the room, trying to lift things.
Do you need help?
No, I've done it. The light is over here, so I shall sit here briefly. Excuse all the noises and the rumbles in this very unprofessional thing. So, as you know, we bought a tractor. And the people who have been viewing it have been so kind about it. We've been trying to find a name for it. It is a Fordson tractor from 1954. And our friend Ian dug out a magazine because he's interested in tractors. He has a tractor, vintage tractor. And from July 2021 in the Tractor and Farming Heritage magazine, there is an article about our said tractor, which I thought might be of interest to you lovely listeners. It says, in 1951, the Ford Motor Company finally realised a dream from the last years of the war to put into production an all-new tractor design, one that would take the Fordson tractor into a new era and finally replace the technology of the original tractor of 1917. It's amazing how long tractors have been around, and the whole transition from horses to mechanical assistance. And as somebody pointed out to me when we started to do our farming on our little plot of 2.5 acres and at Biggleswick Farm, and I was saying, oh, we want to use hand tools and things. And they reminded me, well, horses have been used since the beginning of, and oxen before that, to assist on the heavy work that might be needed, such as pulling carts and, of course, you know, ploughing more than... But ploughing, you still had a horse to help you plough. So some sort of power horse, if I may use that term... Mm-hmm. has been used on the land pretty much as soon as animals were domesticated in, or pulled into service. And of course, in this modern day, it's very difficult on a small piece of land if you haven't got a horse, which has to be maintained and fed and looked after, especially if you're not, you know, if you're living on the land. We're not living on the land at the moment, so we need something that, you know, as much as Julia would love to have a horse, it's just at this stage not practical for us. If we had more land and stables and money, that's what we would do. Anyway, so it's not a surprise, really, or it shouldn't be a surprise, that when you're doing farming, you need some mechanical aids. And these mechanical aids come in all shapes and sizes. There are modern ones, but they're quite expensive. And for us, the choice was, because we are trying to stay in the old-fashioned way and not using a lot of the modern farming techniques, i.e. things like chemicals and ploughing and such like, we thought a tractor would be ideal because, well, we know from the winter that just getting up the track has been a problem. We have lots to do on our land, and a tractor is going to be very useful, not least for pulling out stumps of trees, for hoiking a caravan on the land, for, well, doing all sorts of hauling jobs, moving things about, logs and things that we can't lift. And at the moment, with this strange muscular problem that I've had, and the fact that it's we're relying on ourselves, one doesn't want to get, I don't want to go back into a point where I couldn't work. And so let's not overstrain ourselves and let the mechanical work do what it's supposed to do. Anyway, so that's one of the decisions for having such a marvellous thing. Ford's new machine would keep the name of the current model, the Major, known internationally by Ford as the E27N, although to farmers it was always the Major, or High Henry, or sometimes something less salubrious when the old side valve engine wouldn't start on a frosty morning. The original Major had been a stopgap measure introduced in 1945 to replace the Fordson Model N, or Standard. It had been a great improvement over that machine with all its new back end, including a much more advanced transmission. The old petrol engine was retained, though, and this would be the Achilles heel of the tractor, resolved in 1948, if you could afford it, by fitting a Perkins diesel engine as a factory-fitted option, which is what we have, a Perkins diesel engine. There's some beautiful pictures of these old vintage tractors that, through the different stages in use on the farms, even today. With the dawn of the 50s, the agricultural world was recovering from some sort of normality, and the manufacturing industries could now produce more after post-war material shortages had eased. With the growing prosperity of the new decade, farmers were beginning to re-equip their farms, and mechanisation was now to the fore more than ever before. By the end of the decade, the horse would be almost completely ousted from the farming scene, which is a shame, really, because horses have many advantages, not least they're not as heavy. And even though, you know, on muddy ground, of course, horse hooves continually will cause problems, but they have a number of advantages over a tractor, and a tractor has a number of advantages over a horse. But anyway, let's not get into all of that. We have a tractor, and that's what we're enjoying at the moment, although we're not using it very much, and it will be used sparingly anyway. It's not there as a joyride, and we're not ploughing up the field. Many farmers were familiar with the Fordson N as their motive power due to it being the only mass-produced tractor available during the war, and those that could may have upgraded to the Major as finances and availability allowed. This gave Ford a powerful position on British farms, with their products extremely well known. However, change was in the air, and rivals had made an international dent in sales of Fordson tractors. And it talks about the rivals, and it talks about various other things. I'm just looking here. Down here to see what other bits. The heavier Major and the lighter Ferguson TE20, like Little Grey Fergie, I believe that is, were good pairing. The Major could plod along on heavier tasks and those that didn't really benefit from sensitive haulage needs, although by the end of production several haulage lifts were available for the Major, including three-point linkage types, making it much more versatile. And we have a haulage thing on the back of ours, and I'm curious to know what attachments that we can get, i.e. some form of haulage and bucket, so that we can nip down the track, and if we have a delivery of gravel for the track or for various projects, a bit of hard standing which might be required, or bags of fertiliser and various things, we can then lift them up easily. Initially, we don't have any of those, so and we will be buying bags of fertiliser very soon, actually, as soon as it just dries a little bit, so that we can get the tractor. Because the one problem we have is driving the tractor across the land at the moment where it is so wet, it's been the wettest winter for a while. The ground is incredibly soggy, and we don't want to, you know, put ruts, massive ruts in it. This is where I guess a horse would be much easier, because you could take the horse right round the perimeter and do less damage there. We still have a lot of work on the perimeter to do, i.e. bramble bashing on our land. So the tractor isn't good. But the tractor is good for trailing behind it a mower to, once you've trimmed the brambles, as we are working on at the moment. If you've watched The English Couple, you'll see I was snipping them. Yesterday I was raking the snips, but you've still got the stalks, and this is where a little rotary blade mower will be very useful, just to sort of go into that area and whip off those stalks and get them right down as close as possible. So looking forward to using that. Anyway, after 2 years of the launch of the Ferguson Little Grey Fergie, the perhaps more serious rival was launched. So it has a little bit more horsepower, you see, and that will be useful, because some days we will have the van on the land, and if it gets stuck, we can pull it out. We can pull out the stumps from trees, which the Fergie wouldn't really be able to do. Our tractor, it has a V5, so we could take it on the road if we wanted to. It means I'd have to insure it, etc. But it goes under historic vehicles, which means insurance is incredibly cheap, and the motor tax is exempt. Anyway, 1948, the Morris organisation introduced their Nuffield tractor. It's brand new designed. Not only took its cue from the extensive work in finding out what farms required out of a tractor, but also required new styling. The curved tin work made the Nuffield look as modern as it was, but also made the Fordson tractor look as dated as it undoubtedly was, its fuel tank still forming a cover to the engine rather than a proper sheet metal work. When the new Major was finally launched in November 1951, bear in mind ours is a 54 version, the heart of the new machine, with its superb new four-cylinder overhead valve engine, some basic block forming the basis of three different fuel types, petrol, tractor, vaporising oil and diesel, the development of this new power unit had begun as early as 1944. Anyway, it goes on, blah, blah, blah. Finally, of course, there's lots of this, it's quite a long thing, but basically, from our tractor onwards, there were huge improvements. And whilst we don't have, you know, a 1960s version, we have a much robust and improved version. And for what we need, it's going to be more than enough, because we're not doing 10 acres of ploughing. We don't want to do that kind of farming. With all things mechanical, the new Major developed as the years of production passed. In 1953, most tractors were now fitted with an upright exhaust, which we have, and silencer. Well, I wouldn't say it was terribly silent. Plus, the air intake was now placed through the bonnet to improve the quality of the air breathed in. We have that. It was also in this year that the diesel Major became born. So that's a year prior to ours. With a special badge gracing the bonnet sides, showing just how popular this version had become, putting the other two very much in the shade. Sales continued to grow. And so, yeah, we're thrilled with our little tractor. So anyway, there's lots of lovely pictures of various versions of the tractor. Anyway, it's a nice, interesting article to read, but a little bit of history of ye olde tractor that we bought. And we're thrilled. And we're thrilled that other people are thrilled and think that it was a sensible stuff. It's interesting, though, with everything that we do, and I'm sure it's the same with other YouTube channels, people always want to know how much things cost. And I can understand that when you're on the verge of perhaps venturing in a similar project, you want to know how much each thing's cost. But as Julia and I were talking as we drove to the land yesterday to go and do some work, having read a comment that somebody said, well, how much was your tractor then? People have asked in the past, how much was your land? And it's very difficult to answer. Firstly, whatever we spend is a private thing. Nobody wants to, you know, it's easy enough to go online and have a look at similar models and work out what the going rate is. I mean, that's, you know, easy enough for people to do, so people can go and do that. Whether we got a good deal or not is entirely up to us. And I think we got a very good deal on our tractor because we know the history of it. We know it was lovingly made, restored by these very lovely chaps who pulled it out of a hedge and restored it, as opposed to being sold off by a dealer who then it doesn't necessarily know the great history, and it's just passing through his hands with a profit tag on the top of it. And we were talking about the land costs. Well, there's so many factors on what, you know, people say, well, how much did it cost you to buy your land? We're thinking of buying land. How much did it cost? Well, this is a stupid question, really, because land up and down the country is going to have different costs. The type of land, the type of soil, the size, the shape, the access, what's on the land are all going to be factors. So all I can say is I think we got our land cheaper than perhaps it would have been if it was perfectly flat with no brambles and no stingers and things. If it had been in production and was ready to go for somebody to move in, there would be a premium on it. Our land had been left to us. This is the premium. Our land had been left with no chemicals on it. Well, we know for a fact for 30 years, but also it was a grazing field for cattle prior to that. So the chances are there has been very little, any artificial chemicals, at least for 50 years. And even then it's dubious whether there were chemicals on it prior to that. If it was just as grass, there may have been some chemicals back in the long distance past when the early change in the war came along, who knows? But if there were, it's all gone. And we know the topsoil, although it is littered with seeds from thistles and brambles and stingers and various other things, it's a good foot or more before you reach the clay beneath. And that tells us, you know, that it hasn't been ploughed to death, that it has, over the years, just got all the nutrients from whatever plants have grown and died and left their good stuff in it. So it's very fertile soil. So to us, that's a premium. But to somebody else looking at it, they may go, oh, so much improvement work needs to be done. I'm not paying that. And so the value of the land may be not as cheap, not as expensive as it is somewhere else. So again, saying how much it costs is kind of irrelevant, really, because it's, as I say, it so much depends on where it is in the country and the condition of the land and what's on it. I think we're very lucky with our land because it's got these Christmas trees, which most people would think, oh God, we'd have to get rid of those. Well, we will be getting rid of them in time, but it's very useful timber for the sort of projects that we want to do in terms of building things. So there's swings and roundabouts, all of that. So you just can't, you know, you can't give a guide price to somebody and say, well, it costs X amount of pounds, that's what you're likely to spend, because, you know, it could be different. And a private sale may be cheaper or more expensive than, say, an auction. So you know, I appreciate that people want to gauge. The only thing I would say, and we're not experienced enough really to be an authority on any of this, but I think that whatever money you spend on the land that you've got, depending on whatever size it is, whether it's 2.5 acres or 10 acres, whatever the cost is, I would say that you need the same amount of money again for whatever it is you're going to do if you're starting from scratch. So let's say, for example, I don't know, pluck a figure out of the air. Say the land cost you $100,000. Ours didn't, but let's just say it did. I think that you're still going to need another $100,000, or at least pretty much close to that, because if you have nothing else, you're going to need equipment. You're going to need seeds. You're going to need labour. You're going to need tools. And it depends if you're living on the land or visiting the land, as we are. You're going to need petrol and diesel and accommodation and on all those things. And over, say, 5 to 10 years, you're going to spend probably that same amount again in order to get the thing to up into a position where it's from nothing producing something. It may be that you buy land that's already got a load of stuff already on it, like, you know, beds and nicely fields and good cut hedges and things. Well, in that case, you may not need so much money. So it's how long is a piece of string is what I'm saying. So there really is no answer to that question. But I understand that people are interested. And of course, whatever price your tractor is, going back to the tractor, it doesn't end there. Because let's say you've got 10 acres. Well, and you might want to grow crops. Well, you're going to need a plough. You're going to need all the other attachments. And all of that might add up to the same cost as the tractor. For us, yes, we're going to need a couple of attachments, but we have got some friends that we can borrow bits off of. But we're not doing as much tractoring as we would if it was a bigger piece of land, because a bigger piece of land is going to have hedges that will need trimming and cutting. It's a lot more land to cut grass or to plough if one's ploughing. You might have a lot more trees that you need to pull out. You'd need a harrow and various other tools to level the soil, and so much depends on what you're doing. So these are, you know, they're questions that I understand from an ignorant point of view that someone will ask. But I understand at the same time that, you know, we're ignorant too. But when I bought the land, I was aware that I just needed to double it for everything else for, a 5-year period. Because you're just going to spend it. You know, you are going to spend it because you've got to invest. You can't just buy a piece of land and bang, that's it. Unless, of course, it's already, as I mentioned before, already a working farm. But you still got to carry on maintaining things because nature will take over if you don't. Anyway, I just thought I'd make that clear. And if I haven't made that clear enough, just rewind and listen to it again. Anyway, that's 23 minutes of your life I've bored you with. I hope that was interesting. I need to go and wash up. We've got to get ready. We're going off to back to the land today. See, I'm a all or nothing sort of person, as you may have discovered if you've followed what I do. When we got into the interviews, I was interviewing 2 or 3 times a day and putting them up on the channel. When we did the Bald Explorer, I threw myself into the Bald Explorer, going out, making videos every day, doing walks every day. It's very difficult for me to do lots of different things all at the same time. I have to just concentrate on one thing. And this now, the land, I knew was going to be the new paradigm. And so I'm throwing myself into that project to try and do the best I can. And hopefully it will pay off. Not that I'm looking for a profit. I mean pay off as in the satisfaction of life, which to me is more important than money and more important than anything, is to enjoy your life whilst you are alive. So many people don't. So many people put off their enjoyment for life when they retire, but they may never reach that age. You've got to live now and follow your dreams now. rather than in the future. Do what you can with what little you've got, is what I would say. And that's all I'm going to say now, because we have things to do. Thank you for listening. If you did, if you didn't, you have no idea what I've been gabbling on about, which probably will serve you well. In the best, all the best. Bye for now.